AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. We have got a laser focus on the beef industry today. We're getting to the bottom of a 180-page report on the status of the cattle market and cattle pricing. And we'll talk with a family that is doing exactly what many think should be done to move more of the retail dollar back to the feed yard and to the cow-calf producer.
Live from Fourth Stay Morn via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with David Anderson, Extension Professor at Texas A&M. Then it's on to Todd Herzog from Herzog Meat Company. Right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Yeah, we're going to be hungry for a steak after we're done with this one. Thanks for joining us this morning. And hey, a special thanks to Randy down in Southern Illinois. We're thinking about you, Randy. We're sending you our prayers. Thank you so much for listening. Davis, man, we've got beef on top of beef on top of beef for today's show.
You know, and it begs the question, and I hate to be contrarian right from the jump here.
Okay.
But are we ever not thinking about our next steak experience? I mean, honestly, is it never like not in our minds? Like, oh, dude, you know what? Like, I like it in a cast iron skillet with, like, you pour the butter on top of it.
That's kind of a legitimate question. Yeah. That's a legitimate point you are making. Mm-hmm. You know, and mm-hmm. I do like the fact that that those steak experiences are sometimes interrupted by pork chops or ribs.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, how about a pot roast? And uh-huh. I'll even throw some chicken in there from time to time. Yep. I do like fish, but you're kind of right. You just kind of, what's going to get me from point A being a steak to point B, also being a steak.
Being another steak. That's exactly right. Well, and, you know, actually, you know, sometime when we have we've got someone from the pork industry on, I've been doing some research on bacon.
Oh, yeah?
And my findings are absolutely fascinating. You know, there was this conception for a long time that, oh, bacon, it's horrible for you. Well, let's not get into it. But it's not horrible for you. In fact, it's quite good for you. It might as well be olive oil. And
exactly.
That's true. It's a true statement. We'll get into that another time. There's no time for that now because we're here to celebrate. Go on.
But you're making an excellent point, and it's something that we should cover on here. That
monounsaturated fat. Yes.
There's bad fats. There's good fats, and bacon has some of the good fats.
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah. Yeah.
People don't talk about that.
Man. You just make me so happy here this morning. Let's get to it. What you got the news?
Well, here, let's try this then. The debt limit debate will go into December. What's that do for you? That is, provided Democrats affix a dollar amount to the debt level. As expected, GOP Senate leader Mitch McConnell offered Democrats an alternative route to temporarily raise the debt limit until September. Chip, he proposed two options. One would allow Democrats to fast-track the suspension of the debt limit using budget reconciliation. The other would raise the limit to a specified figure.
Yeah, and they don't want to raise that number to a specified figure because force them to reveal the real costs of the Green New Deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Congressional Budget Office said Wednesday that it is unclear when it will complete a cost estimate of the entirety of the Democratic-backed social spending package approved by House committees. CBO Director Philip Swagel said in a letter to Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, quote, "The legislation being considered by the House is complex, and provisions in some committees' recommendations interact with those of other committees." Again, with the funding.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it is complex. There's no question about that.
The Biden administration's emerging China strategy focuses at home and on allies. This, according to the Wall Street Journal, first, it would rebuild the U.S.'s own domestic economic strength. Second, push U.S. economies to manufacture more at home. And third, work with allies on new trading arrangements that deal with those features of China's system that the World Trade Organization cannot constrain. None of the above reportedly require cooperation from China.
Well, and then will probably not receive any cooperation from China going forward either.
One would expect, yes.
Right.
U.S. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm said the Biden administration said that tapping the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is being considered in a bid to temper rising gasoline prices. However, she also commented that releasing SPR supplies was, quote, very much marginal assistance overall given the scope of the problems. She also did not rule out banning U.S. crude oil exports, saying that it was a, quote, tool that we have not used, but it is a tool as well. And Chip, we reported yesterday that that Strategic Petroleum Reserve is down 15% year on year right now.
Yeah, I don't think that that can solve the problems that we've got when we look at the scope of the problem in Asia and in Europe. It's not going to fix everything.
Russian President Vladimir Putin said Russia could potentially export record volumes of natural gas to Europe this year. Quick certification of the controversial Nord Stream 2 natural gas pipeline would be one way to achieve this, according to Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak. Putin asked his government and energy executives for proposals on how to stabilize the energy market, and Nord Stream 2 was not the only proposal. Putin also highlighted what he called a, quote, mistake made by European authorities to shift from long-term contracts typically favored by Russia to short-term sales on the region's exchanges. He wants to be locked in for the long term on this deal, Chip.
Of course he does, at the highest prices ever.
Well, and General Motors plans to more than double its revenue by 2030 via an influx of new battery electric models and services, including offering to help delivery companies charge and manage electric van fleets. We got GM on this. We've got Ford, Silver, and Chevy's going to make electric Silverados. The EVs are still a big push, Chip.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and it will continue to be. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director there at Drovers. How you doing, Greg?
Good morning, Chip. I'm great.
Good, good, good. Big hearing at the House Ag Committee today.
Yes, in just about an hour, in fact. And the interesting thing about this House Ag Committee hearing is that one of the star witnesses will be Senator Charles Grassley from Iowa. And as you know, Senator Grassley has his own proposal in front of the Senate to do what he calls restore fairness to the cattle markets and improve some transparency. Also testifying today will be Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, along with representatives from the pork, beef, and sheep industries, as well as the National Farmers Union. Chip, this is the fourth House Ag Committee hearing on the cattle markets this year, and it's pretty clear that many of the farm state lawmakers want to do something. And, of course, you know, the other side of the coin is people are saying, we don't want you to do anything that's going to have unintended consequences.
Yep.
I don't know what the right answer is here, Chip, but it appears like they want to try and do something.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Greg, I had a conversation this morning that is going to air next with Dr. Anderson down at Texas A&M, David Anderson, about the 180-page report. We talked about can the cattle market be made better with legislation? That's a part of the conversation that is going to be saved for agweb.com because we just don't have room for it on the show. But we talked for 20 minutes, Greg, about this report. We're going to have 10 minutes of it coming up in the next segment. But, boy, it was a good conversation. I hope you enjoy it too, man.
I will. I'll listen to it. Thank you.
Very good. That is Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Like I said, Dr. David Anderson. Most of the conversation that we had with Dr. Anderson is coming up next right here on AgriTalk.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us this morning because we are going to get to the bottom line of a major report on the cattle industry, the cattle marketing, cattle pricing, transparency, capacity issues. Talking now with Dr. David Anderson. He is at Texas A&M, where he is a professor and an extension ag economist. Dr. Anderson's research focuses on livestock markets, the impact of alternative farm programs on livestock, dairy, and crop sectors. Dr. Anderson, hey, welcome to AgriTalk.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, I feel like we need to set the stage for this discussion because it's 180 page report on the cattle markets called the U.S. Beef Supply Chain Issues and Challenges. And check me on this, David, but the House Ag Committee in 2020 asked USDA to commission the study, and then USDA hooked up with the Agricultural and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M. And then you reached out to, what, 15, 16 economists from across the country to contribute to the effort?
Yeah, we really sort of just let's go out to find people who are, you know, ag economists who are doing research on these big topics in fed cattle pricing and fed cattle markets that so many people have a lot of questions about. So we went to folks who are actively doing research in the area and okay. experts in the area, and we commissioned a set of papers from those people.
Yeah, and those papers turned into the chapters in the book and it's if you haven't seen the book yet, you need to take a look at it. It's exceptionally well done. The introduction to the reports starts with the Holcomb, Kansas fire at the Tyson packing plant there. Is that the event that started to widen the divide between the cattle and the beef markets?
You know, I think a lot of these issues go a lot further back than that. But, you know, that's a good instance of, hey, here's a fire that shuts down a big plant. And when we're already right on the edge of having enough packing capacity, and all of a sudden the plant shuts down, you know, what's going to happen from a plant shutdown is, you know, fed cattle prices are going to go down and beef prices are going to go up. It widens that spread between the two and highlights this, again, the issues that a lot of people have had between what producers get for their livestock and what the meat's bringing in the wholesale market. And so that leads to more capacity problems. The pandemic just piles on to that. And now capacity, packing capacity is a big issue.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to get to that here in just a bit, but first that feed, you said it, the feed yard packer relationship has been stressed for a long time, but I think the report really does a nice job of explaining that there's a reason that the market in the industry is where it is. It's been a pursuit of efficiency that's landed us where we're at, right?
I think that's a fair characterization. Yeah, it's this, you know, and that's really economics driven. And so, you know, we all deal in the market, whether, you know, ranchers, feeders, packers, everybody's got this market that they're working in. And, you know, I would say as an economist, markets work and incentives work. And, you know, we have moved to this pursuit of, you know, we use the word efficiency a lot, but, you know, lowest costs, reducing costs. And that's sort of how markets work.
Yeah. Yeah. Logistics. You got to throw the logistics in there and getting the product from the processor to the retail side as well. There's an excellent discussion in the report on alternative marketing agreements. I'll just ask you this. Are they good or bad?
Yeah. Well, I'd say, you know, first off, there's a bunch of complex questions here. I would argue that we've moved over time with these alternative marketing arrangements where more cattle are sold on formulas and relatively fewer in a negotiated format. There's a reason that packers and feeders, some feeders, have moved that direction. And, you know, it's because there are some benefits to both sides of these. I think you mentioned logistics at one point as we're talking this morning. You know, if you think about a formula, or, you know, you're really working to get so that you have a place for those cattle to go, and the packer right. knows that those cattle are going to show up. If I've yeah. got a, you know, if I'm thinking of one side, if I've got to kill 5,000 head a day, I need 5,000 head a day showing up. And that's right. not a small task. On the other side, for a feeder, I need to move those animals out when they're ready to go. I need to have a place for them to go. And, you know, formulas, I think, are also part of how the industry has moved to value-based marketing. If we go back to the original beef quality audit in the 80s, when, you know, an industry-driven thing that to respond to yep. falling beef demand, we've got to change. We've got to have a higher quality, more consistent product. And, yep. you know, that's an industry-driven effort, and I think AMAs are part of how we reward quality, how the market rewards yep. quality.
Processing capacity is a topic that was mentioned in many of the papers in the report. Is that where the answer is? Will more slaughter capacity help to divvy up that retail dollar in a way that everybody that touches a steer before it gets to the packer will find more satisfying?
You know, I think it addresses one thing. If we had more capacity, and I would argue for the last 40 years, until 3 or 4 years ago, we had excess capacity. We had more capacity to slaughter and process cattle than we had cattle. And if you think about it, heck, we had peak numbers in the mid-70s, 134 million head of cattle in the U.S. Today, we got less than 100 million, but we produce more beef today with fewer animals. Yeah. And so if you think about packing plants, you know, it's head going in, but parts going out, right? And so we had a capacity that was built for a lot more animals, which means we had overcapacity, and over time, plants have closed. And so now we're to the point in the last couple of years where all of a sudden we don't have excess capacity. Right. We have a lack. We got more cattle than capacity, which right. leads you to lower cattle prices. And so, you know, if we had more capacity, that would help to get higher okay. prices, I think. But, you know, more capacity by itself doesn't mean that we would necessarily have more cattle trading in a negotiated format, because it right. could be a new plant opens. And let's say it's a plant that it could be, you know, any kind of structure. But what if it's a co-op and rancher feeders have right. bought into building this plant? Well, they likely have committed cattle to this plant. And so that plant may not be buying out right. in the open market. It may be buying from this committed group of producers. Would you want that new plant to buy in a negotiated format? And one of the responses was really interesting. I said, you know, I don't think it matters. You know, it would help with capacity. Well, mm-hmm. yeah, but it may not help the other way. You know, right. so it's a complex set of interrelated problems, and which means that as much as we would like an easy answer, there ain't no easy answer.
that's the exact point that I was just going to make. There are no easy answers on this. All right, last question for you. If there's one thing that from this effort that you want participants in the process to understand, what is it?
I would say that I'm not sure there's a more complex market than the cattle industry.
Yeah.
And all the parts that we have, from the ranch to stockers to feeders, packers, retailers, export markets, you know, we're fundamentally different than some other industries in that, you know, at a packing plant in the meat industry, you know, one thing comes in and parts go out. Lots of everything else we make, it's lots of parts come in and one thing goes out.
Yep.
And it's a complex industry, and it's one that's going through changes, and change is hard.
Yeah.
And it brings up all of these really complex questions and difficult questions, and it's important to people. And I think that's one of the things out of this set of papers that we've bundled up. There's a lot of good, sound, recent research in there on some of these complex problems. And if you're interested in the best, you know, if you want to try to make the most informed decision that you can, and look at the research, and you may support a position that might impose more costs in the transaction, but it may be because you've made a decision that you believe that the benefits outweigh that.
Right.
And I think this sheds some light on a lot of these complex questions that are out there that people have.
And gotcha.
And we're also trying to educate folks who they may not be in the cattle business or they may not be trading cattle, but they might be a staff person for your representative or senator, and it gives them a reference that, hey, you know, here's some sound research-based work.
Right, right. Dr. Anderson, you've been more than generous with your time this morning. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Anytime. Thanks for calling.
All right. That is Dr. David Anderson, Texas A&M professor and Extension Ag economist. We'll be right back. Got a conversation with Mocan Beef Processing.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, I'm going to take you all the way to the spring wheat market, because in the grains, that's really the only market that's showing us some strength here this morning.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of been like watch the bouncing ball in the grain and soy market so far this morning, because we've been up, we've been down, we've been up again, now we're mixed, but spring wheat is trading to the upside. New contract highs there for today, I think that market still has a little bit of life left in it, but it's probably the winter wheat markets that, if we're going to have like a really sustained move to the upside, are going to need to carry it because they have greater speculative interest.
Okay, very good. We've got some strength in the soybean oil market, and that's led to some mixed trade in beans.
Yeah, the outside markets are having a huge influence, and I talked about the back and forth trade, the big price swings that we've seen through the morning, and it's those outside markets that are influencing, and we saw crude oil lower, and now it's higher again. That's having an influence on soy oil and firming up trade there and trying to firm trade in the bean market.
All right, yeah, Mexico bought corn, Mexico bought beans, not having much impact on the corn market here today. Let's go over to livestock. Got some strength in the cattle complex.
Yeah, both live cattle and feeder cattle are trading moderately to sharply higher. I think you can look at the stock market. We've got pretty significant gains going on there, and they're responding to that. Not a whole lot of fundamental news, to be honest with you, aside from, the beef exports were record strong again in August. Not a surprise there.
Yeah, very good. A little bit of pressure in the lean hog market this morning. All right, thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
A little cold weather never hurt anybody, but with typical number 2 diesel, it can do a number on your field equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn. That's how Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster Seasonally Enhanced optimizes cold weather performance. Or stick with your fair weather friend, typical number 2. Your choice. Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with me.
Dude.
Interesting conversation there with David Anderson.
One thing comes in and parts go out. Yeah. Usually it's parts go in and one thing comes out.
Yep.
Speaking in reference to the complexity.
Yes.
Related to the cattle market.
Exactly. And that's why logistics play such an important piece, or it's such an important piece in the conversation, mm-hmm. because it's one thing to be able to process a beef into a carcass. But in the old day, that was fine. You could send the carcass out to the butcher shop, and the butcher would take care of it. And you stop in, and you buy your steaks. And when the steaks are gone that day, the steaks are gone.
Right.
Well, the major retailers out there in the grocery business don't like that answer anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't like that answer of when the steaks run out, the steaks run out. They want to make sure that they've got plenty of steaks out there and ready to go. Okay, we're going to go ahead and jump right into this conversation here with Todd Herzog, Mocan Livestock, Herzog Meat Company. He joins us right now. Todd, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing real fine, real fine. Man, thank you for coming on and having the conversation with us. Let's just start at the very beginning, because I've been watching the development of your processing plant down there in Missouri, and this has been quite the process. What was the motivation, Todd?
Well, I mean, obviously, we are cattle producers at heart. We've been in the livestock industry for a long time. You know, we've got roots dating back to the late 1890s of our family in the industry, so it's something near and dear to our heart. You know, just owning cattle, raising cattle, producing cattle, wanting to promote our product as beef, you know, on the backside. And so we've always sold some beef and yep. wanted to put in a retail market kind of closer to the city, you know, 5-6 years ago. And I just didn't want to do the brick and mortar thing without having an actual processing facility, because that was always a bottleneck. You could never get in, you never get your animals processed. And then there are so many inconsistencies within the process when you take your cattle in, whether it being a miscut or the aging process wasn't right. You know, the carcass coolers didn't age right, and your meat was a little bit different than what you thought it should be. So we just kind of took the ball in our own court. You know, COVID kind of shed a lot of light on it. Everyone knows that. It's a well-known covered topic. But we had the ability to do something about it, and we built a USDA – fully federal inspected processing facility and opened in May. And we are doing here, we're doing a lot of retail, like mm-hmm. out the front door. We're selling into some, you know, some smaller wholesale markets. We're kind of getting into some smaller retail markets up in the city. And then we're also doing a lot of custom label, like private pack for individuals all across, you know, kind of surrounding 400-500 mile area, bringing their cattle in, harvesting them for them. And it's nice as a cattle producer to be able to work with other cattle producers yep. and help them add value to what they're doing.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Todd, we just had that conversation with David Anderson on the air here and talked about the need for some additional capacity to help make that cattle market better. And that's part of the motivation here as well, isn't it?
Certainly. I mean, that's
yeah.
Everyone wants to capture a little bit of that value on the backside, right? I mean, everybody yep. wants to capture a little bit of what cattle producers are. They're prideful people. I mean, we're proud of what we do and we're proud of our products. So, I mean, obviously you're proud to sell your beef to an individual consumer, and there really are no channels for cattle producers to do that. So when you add capacity in the form of a packing house or a processing yeah. facility, you add the ability for producers to be able to sell their beef regionally or locally.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And when we're talking about capacity here, you're into processing what now, 60, 75 head a week?
We're around 50 to 60 head a week.
Okay.
And like today we're processing cattle out of Iowa. While we're processing cattle out of Iowa, my cut floor is processing further processing steaks for a company in Nebraska. So and then when we finish processing these steaks for this company in Nebraska, we'll switch right back over and I'll go to cutting some retail meat up. And
yep.
And so we're really wearing a bunch of different hats right now. We're boxing yep. out whole primals for individuals and grading cattle and shipping them out wholesale. And then we're breaking animals all the way down to where we're cutting 10-ounce strips and 14-ounce yep. ribeyes and prepackage and roll stock that way. So we really do everything under one roof, kind of in house.
Well, And you used a word that you don't typically hear associated with retail processing or branded process. You're talking about hanging these carcasses for a while before you process them, aren't you?
Yeah, we typically, coming out of our hot box, we'll go into our carcass cooler, our dry aging cooler for, you know, 12 to 14 days and put a hang on them. And that process right there is different than you can buy anywhere. And so that's when you hear people talk about the quality of meat. It's not just our beef. It's any beef that we hang in here for anybody. They'll tell you to a T, I don't care who you ask, it's the best beef they've ever had. Just because it's almost like a tenderization. It's a natural tenderization process that goes through in that aging process.
That's right.
Especially if those cattle have a little bit of fat cover on them, a little back fat, they age really well. And you cut those, you know, you cut some ribeyes out of a rib loin and they're damn near falling apart on you when you cut them through the saw.
Oh man.
So,
okay.
It's spectacular.
Okay. Yep. I, like I said, I've been watching watching it from afar. You developed the meat business there, Todd, and I had a conversation with Jim earlier this week, your dad, about what's going on, and what spurred the conversation was your product, your branded product was available in Hy-Vee stores. What's the status on that now?
Well, I won't get into that a whole lot because we're talking right now, but I will tell you about the situation.
Okay.
You know, there was a lot of people that watched us, just like you're saying, from the time we built this thing from ground up. I mean, from the time we started, you know, 16 months ago until where we are right now and have built a brand, you know, producing this awesome local beef. And then we're able to, you know, so we had a lot of people cheering us on, the whole time, you know, in the industry. You know, we had a lot of customers ourselves that we've been selling to for years. And so we had cheerleaders all along the way. Well, we get into this deal and we start selling. And when we got into four different stores and we're on our way into seven different stores and everything was rolling right along. Well, when we got yanked off the shelf, the base got pretty upset, and it was kind of neat to see the people come together. You know, our just the whole ag community itself kind of banded together and kind of saw what was going on there and really kind of made some waves. And, I'll just say that those voices were heard. And
okay.
I mean, they were heard by everybody in the industry. And so there's some negotiation going back and forth now. And you know, Hy-Vee is a good company. They want to promote local. And so it looks like in a real short term, we're going to be right back in there on the shelves and probably even a lot more stores than we were ever in.
Good, good, good. You know, you said it, that there's been a lot of cheerleaders for you out there. And I think it's because, And I'd like your thoughts on this. I think it's because, Todd, there's a lot of people in the cattle industry are hoping that your plant, your facility, can be kind of a template for plants to pop up in different regions around the country to add the capacity that we need.
Yeah, it's a tricky, tricky business to be in, though. I mean,
sure.
I often go to bed at night thinking, like, I wouldn't wish this stress upon anybody. I mean, I'd go back into hopping in the feed truck and rolling a TMR out to yearlings all day long. This is a whole different situation. I mean, it's kind of uncharted waters. You know, you're starting, not only starting a brand new company, but you're starting all brand new relationships all over again. And so the relationships that we have built and created on the cattle side are totally different than the relationships that I'm trying to build on the meat industry side. And in the beef industry itself, the meat industry itself as a whole, it's an old industry. I mean, it's real tight knit. I don't have to get into all the specifics. You know how tight knit the industry is. And so for us to come along, I mean, it's going to take time for us to prove ourselves, you know, in our processes and our quality of our animals and kind of what we're doing, for us to even be legitimate And it could take years for that to happen. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, nor do I expect it to or anticipate it to, or do I think it should happen overnight. It should take time for us to build the trust, you know, to do business with some of these other people.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. But, you know, Todd, we're going to continue to watch as the business develops. We're going to have to get you back and get an update on the situation at some point. But it's been a fascinating process to watch to this point. Good luck to you. Thank you for sharing the story. And as I said, good luck, man.
Thank you very much.
All right. That is Todd Herzog, Herzog Meat Company, Mocan Livestock Company. Davis and I are going to be right back. I'm going to run upstairs, make a steak sandwich, and then I'll be back to wrap it up.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Davis Michelson here with Chip Flory.
Yo.
Just finished up a conversation first with David P. Anderson from Texas A&M and then Todd Herzog from Herzog Meat Company. Talking beef today.
Yeah.
can we just run this chronologically just a little bit?
Sure.
And I mean, given we already discussed the inherent complexity within the cattle market itself
many times.
Given that, do you foresee a bold new future where some sort of legislative process can fix the perceived ills, the perceived shortcomings, the difficulties dealing with that complexity within the cattle market? Is there a legislative fix?
Can we make the market better than what it is today with a legislative action?
Right.
Right. Okay. That's what they're trying to figure out at the House Ag Committee today with that hearing that Greg talked about. I asked Dr. Anderson about that in the conversation. We didn't have time to put that on the air. That part of the conversation is available along with the rest of it. The full conversation that I had with David is available on agritalk.com. And if it's not available right now, it will be available on the AgriTalk app. Mm-hmm. It was funny when Greg was talking about the potential for a legislative action to help this cattle market. He used the same words that I used when I, in a follow-up question to Dr. Anderson, and that is, yeah, I understand that people are tired of hearing this. I get this. But the reality is, when there's a legislative fix, there's typically unintended consequences that come along with it. That's why Dr. Anderson one point in the conversation, talking about negotiated sales, added the fact that, listen, if we increase the number of negotiated sales, it may increase costs for the industry, and it may take a bite out of what that packer is willing to pay. But some people in the industry have decided, listen, that's the cost of doing business right. And if it's going to cost us a little bit more money to do it right, then we need to get back to doing it right, and we're willing to accept those costs.
Okay, but
that's a paradigm shift, man. That is a paradigm shift.
Because isn't the problem right now that enough of that retail dollar isn't making its way back through the chain, back to the feedlot, back to the backgrounder, back to the. Yeah. So, okay, they feel like they're losing money there. They're leaving money on the table. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what you just said, just from the legislative part? Well, it's a cost of doing business.
Well,
aren't we exchanging one inequity for another in that?
Okay,
and I don't know.
Now you're talking about cycles. And because
okay.
we've gone through periods of time where being in the beef packing business was a losing proposition. It's not right now, and it's not right now because there's awesome demand for beef. We changed the demand picture in 2020 and encouraged and incentivized more consumers to stay home and eat beef, and that stuck. That ability for those consumers to take beef home and make a delicious meal that is satisfying to them and their family stuck. They know how to do that now. They don't have to just go out to a restaurant to get a satisfying beef meal. So that has expanded our domestic demand. At the same time, we've got a lot of the number of cattle that we've got available to the processors exceeds, not by much, but exceeds processing capacity. So it's not like the processors who are making money. The big four packers are making big money on every cattle they kill. But the it's not like they've got to run out and bid aggressively for those animals, because they know if they sit back and wait, somebody at some point is going to hit the price that they're bidding, because you can't keep them in the feedlot any longer. So they've got to go to market. At some point, because of the way that we've had the drought out west and up in North Dakota, South Dakota, cattle country, cow-calf country, we've moved a lot of the beef cows to market out of the herd. Our calf crop in 2021, total calf crop, is going to be below what it was in 2020. The calf crop in 2022 is going to be below the calf crop that we had in 2021. So we're tightening up those market numbers at a time that we are putting $500 million of loans and grants into the system to increase capacity to process meat. So if we build all that up, and let's say we add 10 Mocans, and we've got, you know, they're processing 500 a week. Is that enough to move the balance and move the leverage back to the feed yards? I don't know if it is or not, but I will tell you this. You combine more processing capacity with fewer market cattle available out there, and already the cycle is suggesting that we're moving the leverage to the feed, back to the feeder anyway. So,
this
stuff's going to collide at some point, Davis.
I tend to believe that the smaller the scale of the processor itself, the better the steak that comes out the other side, too. Well, maybe I'm wrong in that.
Hey, man.
But I don't think so.
When you're hanging them for a while, that's a good add to the processing. No question about that. Man, it was great conversations on the show today. Thank you for listening. We've got Dan Utek this afternoon right here on AgriTalk.
That's right.